The central episode of Parshas Chayesara, of course, is the quest, the mission to find a wife for Yitzchak, Eliezer's journey. I'm not sure that the enterprise of Shiduchim has gotten any less complicated over the years, but certainly there is what to contemplate in this Parsha. And I would like to move straight to that test. Of course, the beginning of Parshas Chayesara, the purchase of Maaseh Machpela, is its own discussion, which we've approached a number of times. But for this evening, to move straight to the test, and that's to be found in Perek Kaf Dalet, Sukkim Yud Gimel, and Yud Dalet. And as always, as much as we have a general picture of and description and summary of how we would phrase what happens in the Parsha, we always look back to the Psukim for further insight. In our own words, we would say the test very simply. Eliezer says, I'm here, whoever I ask for water, and she'll give me not only meat to drink, but also the camels to drink. She's the one. And the truth is, of course, that's enough. That's plenty. But as we look closer at the Psukim, we see that there are more elements to the test which make it even harder and make the fact that Rivka passed this test all the more spectacular. And it begins actually with perhaps even seemingly innocuous words. Pasuk Yud Gimel says, Hineh nochi nitzav al ein hamayim. Here I am, standing by the well, uvnos anshei ha'ir yotzos lishav mayim, and the daughters of the inhabitants of the city, they're going out to draw water. In this pasuk, there are already two elements which would make it even more remarkable for the girl to respond in the way that she did. Firstly, Eliezer says, Hinei anochi nitzav al ein hamayim. Nitzav has a connotation of a person who's standing tall, firm, as if to say, when she comes out, she's going to see him standing right there. Which means that when he asks for water, one could say that even a generous response would be to lend her jug to this person who's just standing there. If he was collapsing or crawling or somehow withering, clearly it's something that he can't do by himself, that's one thing. But he's standing right there, and to remain standing while she will be doing all of this, that already is a much greater gesture on her part. What's more, just to add a parenthetical comment, but I think it really accentuates the point, Pasuk Yud Zayin says, Vayaratz ha'eved likrosa, he ran towards her. And of course, everyone asks, why did he run? What did he see? Rashi says he saw the water coming up to meet her. That's clearly, she's the one to start with, no question about it. But we forget that part of what the pasuk is saying is exactly that. He ran towards her. In other words, he bounded up towards her, seemingly full of energy. Which, once again, if she will draw the water for him, where clearly he's fit, and if he can run, he can draw water, but nonetheless, she would do it for him. Another aspect, and all of this is described by the Malbim, of course, this is his specialty, to look closely at the psukim and pay note to everything. He mentions, uvnos anshei ha'ir yotzos lishov mayim. Everyone's coming out to draw water. So this isn't just setting the scene as if to say, now is the time. But rather, it's often the case that a person who might be inclined to step in and help, that would be in a situation where there's no one else to help. As if to say, there's some situation that needs attention, and you're the only one there, so then, im ein ani li, mi li, or im ein ani lahem, mi lahem. If I'm going to do it, not going to do it, no one else will. very often safety in numbers means that if there's many people there, so part of each person's response is, well, why me? There are a dozen other girls here who could just as easily have been approached, and that lessens, in a sense, the forthcomingness of someone to actually help. And that's why Eliezer says here, "Benos and Sheha'ir," everyone's there, which means whoever I approach, there'll be people to the right and people to the left, but they won't look to the right or to the left. They'll be accepting of the opportunity to do kindness. Further, Pasuk Yudalit, "V'haya ha'na'ara asher omarleh hatino chadech ve'eshteh." These words are very precise. Eliezer says, if I will say to her, please incline the jug that I can drink, which means that she's holding a jug, and it's a jug full of water, which is a heavy thing, and for his convenience, he'll ask that she incline it so that he will be able to take a drink. But that is a very, that's good service, I mean, on her part, as opposed to saying, take the jug and drink to your heart's content. But for her to hold it for him as he's drinking, I mean, it's literally royal treatment. Ve'al kulona, of course, if she responds and not only says, shasei v'gam k'malecha ashker, to offer to go above and beyond what is already seemingly an outrageous request, to nonetheless offer to give also the camels to drink, she's the one. I mean, that is a person who is absolutely stellar in the area of chesed, in the area of kindness. A further point, which is mentioned by the Kli Yakar, and it really relates to a general question as to what type of girl Eliezer is looking for. That is to say, we understand that one of the things that a person looks for when it comes to shiduchim is yichus, from a good family, from nobility. Says the Kli Yakar, what are the chances that he's going to find a daughter of nobility at the well? Meaning, whoever is of a distinguished family, presumably, they will have the help go to draw the water. Which means it's a very unlikely that in a situation where it's really much more common people who are drawing the water, he'll find someone of stock. That is assuming that that's what he's looking for. And this is the assumption of the Kli Yakar. After all, on the list of things one looks for in shiduchim, it's certainly yichus. So why go to the well? He should go to the local finishing school or the Aramean equivalent. That seems very unlikely. And indeed, the Pirkei de Belezer says that this was that Rivka had never gone out to the well before to draw water. Vihine, as Pasuk Tesvav says, Vihine Rivka yotzeis. Vihine is always a chiddush. It's a new development. It's the first time Rivka had ever gone out. And that is the simple meaning of the words in Pasuk Tet Zayin, where it says, V'ish lo yida'a, no one knew her, meaning no one recognized her. She wasn't part of those who normally congregated around the well. Of course, there are those who opine, and the Malbim is amongst them, that Eliezer was not looking for Yichus necessarily. Because one of the things about fine families is that they have fine demands. After all, Eliezer was already asking for something quite significant. He's asking that they let their daughter go to a different country to marry, albeit into a good family. But having said that, people who are of the blue blood type, they're not so interested in letting their daughter go with some person who just turned up, even if they have good credentials. And therefore, on the contrary, says the Malbim, he was actually looking for a family that did not have such airs and graces. The type of family that would let their daughter, send out their daughter to draw water from the well, is more likely to be agreeable to let her go to the shidduch, which is becholzot quite an undertaking. And therefore, as far as Malbim is concerned, yichus was not the order of the day here. And in some cases it's important, in shidduchim it remains important, in other cases not so much. There are certain places, as Rav Aaron Leib Shteinman Zatzal used to comment, there are institutions of education where the first question they ask is, who's the father? And Rav Steinman used to say, you're not educating the father. His education is complete already, or we hope so. You're educating the child. But this is the first question, and sometimes one of the most important questions, which, of course, are completely irrelevant. Rav Steinman used to comment in this regard that in terms of the way people do things in certain institutions, they would have been more likely to let Yishmael into their yeshiva than to let Avram into their yeshiva. Because Yishmael has incredible yichus. He's the son of Avram. Who's Avram's father? Terah. They would have said yes to Yishmael and no to Avram. And that's the way it goes. So this is the second point. If we understand indeed that he was looking for that type of distinguished lineage, he's really chosen the wrong place, which makes it all the more unlikely. And the final point, which is mentioned by Mefarshim, and then perhaps a point of our own, and that is, if we see his words, he starts by saying in Pasuk Yud Beis Vayomar, Hashem Elokei Adoni Abraham, Hakreinah Lefanai Hayom, please arrange a happening, an occurrence for me today. That means that Eliezer is requesting that the test be passed today. Okay, well, a day is a long time. But if we go back to the previous pasuk Yud Aleph, which states by Avrechag Malim Michutz La'ir Al Be'er Amayim, so he takes the camels there to the well. Le'eis Erev, it's towards evening time. Which means now, when you look at the next pasuk, which says, and I'd like this to happen today, really what he means, in the very, very near future, because it's almost evening, le'eis erev. There's not too much time left in the day at all. So it's a smaller time window, very unusual demands, an exceptional response that's required. Now we're beginning to get a sense of the measure of the test that Eliezer has set up. And I believe there's another point, maybe it's a practical point, but nonetheless, we ask, in order to pass the test, you need to be forthcoming with that response. How many times can Eliezer meaningfully put this test to anyone? In the sense that if he goes to the first girl and she says she gives him to drink, but then she doesn't do anything else, so she's failed. But now what? He's already drunk a jug of water from her. It's a practical point, but I think really what that means is that he can only really try this once, or maximally twice. And if it's not the right one, then that's it. He can't drink anymore. And moreover, I'm not sure that anyone else would take that kindly to giving him to drink when he's already had a jug of water to drink from two people already. That's the point where other people might say, I think he's had enough. And therefore, it really seems that what Eliezer is asking for is not only this should happen quickly, but it really has to happen to the first person he approaches. He cannot meaningfully approach more than one person. And with all of this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrates the one to come out is Rivka, and she is the one who passes the test. And the rest, of course, is history. It's our history. And once she, if we move further into the Apsukim here, so Pasuk Kaf Beis states, so she's given him to drink, she's given the camels to drink. And moreover, Pasuk Kaf Aleph, even just again to note these psukim, Va'ish Mishta'ela, he's waiting. Macharish Ladas Hatzliach Hashem Der Kerem Lo. He's waiting to see as Hashem really granted him success. The truth is that the longer he waits, the harder the test becomes. Because we should remember that he has 10 camels, and he's just waiting there. Which means that one could have perhaps envisaged that maybe after one or two camels, and she's certainly been Yotzei Yedei the camels, and it's already down to three and four, she might ask him, well, do you mind taking maybe one or two of the camels, and then I'll take over again. As if to say, with each successive camel, the test actually becomes harder, and when she finishes, she doesn't say anything. And she did the whole thing by herself. But Eliezer, at this point, so he takes out some items of jewelry. If we have a look at Pasuk Kaf Beis, Vayihi, Kasher Kilu Agmalim Lishtos, when all the camels are finished, Vayikach Ha'ish Nezim Zahav, so he takes a ring, a nose ring, Beka Mishkalo, which has the weight of a beka, half a shekel, Ushneitz Midim Al Yadeha, Asara Zahav Mishkalam, and two bracelets for her hands, altogether 10 shekels of gold. Okay, so this is the jewelry. The next pasuk says she asks who she was. And here we have an interesting discussion among the Mefarshim, how to understand the sequence of events. Rashi tells us that he's convinced that she's the one, and he's convinced that Hashem is showing him great bracha, which means he's proceeding even before asking her who she is. He knows that she's the one. Okay, as we know, later on, he reverses the order and says that first he asked her who she was, and then gave us that the people shouldn't think of it. It's the type of person that gives jewelry just to anyone. Maybe they'll have second thoughts. They shouldn't think he's too hasty. But in reality, that's exactly what he did, because he was supremely confident that she was the one for Yitzhak, and therefore he proceeded to give her the jewelry even before asking her name. Interestingly, Ramban notes that nowhere in the pasuk does it say that he gave her the jewelry. All it says is he took it, meaning he had it ready. The Ramban understands that even this pasuk doesn't necessarily mean that he took it and gave it to her. Rather, he has it prepared, he asks who she is, and assuming everything's in order, then he gave her the jewelry. So that's Ramban's approach, actually not what we're used to from Rashi, but we do note that the pasuk doesn't say that he gave it to her. In his account of events, he says, I asked her name, she said she was Rivka, and then I gave her the jewelry. So according to Ramban, there's no conflict between those two. And he took it, had it ready, asked her name, and when she was Rivka, he gave it to her. So that's Ramban. A very interesting approach, again, to this jewelry is to be found in another of the Rishonim, Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor. Rabbeinu Yosef Bechor Shor, the Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam, I believe. And he's listed or grouped with the Baalei HaPshat. And he has his approach to the jewelry here is that it had nothing to do with the Shidduch. As if to say, Eliezer is full of gifts, as we know. And this young lady has just performed an outstanding service for him, which means he gave her the jewelry because she did such a kindness to him. And it has nothing to do with, is she the one for Yitzchak? But it's very simply, thank you very much. Here, this is for you. And then asked who she is, and then things proceeded. But according to the Bechor Shor, the ring and the two bracelets, that's not conditional upon her being the one for Yitzchak. That's very simply in recognition of the fact that she did this amazing thing to give him to drink and also his camels. So that's quite an interesting variety yet among the Rishonim to understand the sequence of events and the point behind giving these gifts. But as we come back to Rashi, and Rashi says that it's part of Eliezer's confidence that she's the one for Yitzchak, and Rashi moreover comments on the significance of these items. The ring is a beka, that's a half a shekel, that's a remez, says Rashi. Remez l'shikle Yisrael, beka l'gulgoles, that's to the machtis a shekel. The shnei tzemidim is a remez to the two luchos, asara zahav, remez l'aseres hadibro shebahen. So Rashi sees, after all, the pasuk does tell us quite a bit about this jewelry. Had the pasuk just said that he took out a ring and bracelets, so there are ring and bracelets, it's a ring and bracelets, it's jewelry, but the pasuk gives us a lot of detail about these things. What was the weight of the ring? What was the weight of the bracelet? That's very specific, and presumably that's why Rashi feels that the pasuk is indicating that we need to be aware of the significance of these numbers. The half a shekel, and the 10, the 2, and the 10, etc. And the Levush Ha'ora, Rav Mordechai Yaffa, who was a Talmud of the Ramah, and he's the Baal HaLevushim, he has a Levush of something on everything, on all sections of Shulchan Aruch, and he wrote Levush Ha'ora on Rashi's commentary. And he raises an interesting shaila, and that is, for whom the allusion? For whom the remez? That the half a shekel is like this, and the two bracelets are like that, and the weight of 10 represents aseres hadibros. For whose benefit is this? And really the question is, to what degree do we assume Rivka is aware of the significance of these items? After all, and one can never know, but it's worthwhile raising the question. Here's Rivka, and this person gives her a nose ring of half a shekel. Do we understand Or are we meant to understand that she looks at this ring, she weighs it somehow, either sizes it up or she knows these things, she takes it, it's half a shekel, and half a shekel clearly is machzitz ha-shekel. That is a lot of pre-information. And then you've got these two bracelets, and between the two of them, she knows to weigh them up together. And they're 10 shekels, and that's aseres hadibros. That's a lot of on-the-spot assessment of the significance of these things. Now, on the one hand, she's Rivka, so anything is possible. I mean, look what else she's done. So we don't know. We can never really know the madrega of the Ovos and the Imos. So we can never preclude anything. But the Levush HaOra himself is more inclined to say that, and it's a very interesting point to consider, that maybe Rivka herself is not aware of the amounts and the significance. But they're significant nonetheless, because Rivka is the mother of the mothers of the Jewish people. All the Jewish people are descended from her. And what we're seeing here is the concept of Maaseh Avos Siman Labanim. And what that means is that as we've mentioned on many occasions, the experiences of the Jewish people are pre-experienced by the Avos and the Imahos. And some of those experiences might not necessarily be with their consciousness that they are pre-experiencing, and maybe it doesn't matter. Whatever is the meaning and the value of this pre-experiencing, when it's in order, as the Levush HaOra invokes the idea of poel dimyon, it's like a symbolic act, it's a trigger act that allows things to then happen later on, perhaps that is true, and that's valid and effective, regardless of whether the people involved are necessarily conscious of the weights and the significance, etc. These things have a significance of their own. It's part of the Maaseh Avos. And I came across in this regard to see the extent of the Maaseh Avos in this part of the episode. And the Torah does give us really a lot of detail. It's expanded upon by Rabbeinu Bachya, and he mentions a number of aspects of Maaseh Avos, each one more interesting than the other, because the Rabbeinu Bachya sees in a sense, the continuation of the Jewish people. And it's really, this is the first time we see one of the Avos and the Imos, in a sense, their marriage happening, as if to say, Avram and Sarah, the pasuk says Avram married Sarah, but the process of getting married, we see in the Avos and the Imos, we see it really for the first time with Yitzhak and Rivka. And Rabbeinu Bachya says, V'hinei, kol ha-ma'oraos ha'ele le-Rivka, all of these events, the whole thing, with Rivka, kol siman levaneha, it's all a siman for her children. What do we see? Says Rabbeinu Bachya. Firstly, keshem shaya malach imo baderech. We sometimes forget, but Avram told Eliezer, Hashem will send a malach before you to help you. The next time you find that is when Hashem says to the Jewish people, I will send my malach before you to help you. Hinei anochi shalech malachi levanecha. And therefore Eliezer, in this episode, he is a malach going for him to help him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends a malach before Bnei Yisrael to help them. We noted before that what Eliezer saw with Rivka is that the water of the well rose up to her. That is something that will be repeated with the Jewish people in the Midbar. Because as the Pasuk says, in Shiras HaBe'er, Be'er Shel Miriam, that actually the water came up to them. Ali be'er, enula, let the water come up. Furthermore, and this now is fascinating, the eved, the servant, who gave Rivka these gifts, ramas lo bahem, ki kashem shekibla hi amatana se'ele ayde eved, in the same way that she received these gifts from a servant, Moshe Eved Hashem. So too, her descendants would receive the Torah through Moshe, Hashem's faithful servant. And what's so fascinating about this part of Rabbeinu Bachya is that we find it very interesting that Eliezer can even be part of this whole process of Maaseh Avos, as if to say that Maaseh Avos relates to the Avos and the Imahos. Eliezer, he's an Eved of Avram, but he's not exactly part of the Avos and the Imahos. One may have thought that therefore he might not be part of the concept of Maaseh Avos. Rabbeinu Bachya says, not only is he, the Eved, part of the concept of Maaseh Avos, but as an Eved, it's part of the Maaseh Avos of the Eved, who will be later on. That's also part of the Maaseh Avos. Moreover, just to conclude this section, Baal Peh, there are two further points. Eliezer gives gifts, and the gifts, of course, are allusion to the mitzvahs, the Bachtas HaShekel and Aseres HaDibros. He gives gifts in two installments. Number one, on the derech, meaning outside by the well. And number two, when he comes to her home. That's when he gives a second installment of gifts. So too, says Rabbeinu Bachya, the mitzvahs were presented to the Jewish people at two significant junctures. Number one, Baderech, Har Sinai, the Mishkan, etc., kind of in the middle of nowhere. And then later on, as they're approaching Eretz Yisrael in Arbos Moab, then you have the rest of the mitzvahs are given to them. So we have mitzvahs, gifts given in two installments, on the derech and at home. And for Simon Labonim, we have mitzvahs given in two installments, in the Midbar, and then as we approach home. And the second point, the final point, says Rabbeinu Bachya, is, isn't it interesting that the parsha of Eliezer is repeated in this perek? That means that you have first the Torah and then you have Divrei Eliezer. And that is exactly what happened with the Torah, whereby you have the first Chumashim and then you have Mishnah Torah, which is Moshe Rabbeinu, Ha'il Moshe. And he goes over and says the Torah in his words. Of course, in the end, it becomes part of Chumash. But the concept of Mishnah Torah, the first time you have a deutero iteration of anything in Torah, is actually with Eliezer, who is the Maaseh Avos for Moshe Eved Hashem. So that is a spectacular section of Rabbeinu Bachya, really expanding on what Rashi began with the Remozim and the significance of these gifts. So from general Parshanut to more the world of symbolism, let us take a look at a Lashon HaKodesh issue in the Pasuk. And that begins in Pasuk Lamed Beis. We're all in Perek Kafdalet here. So what happens? Lavan invites Eliezer and his men, and they all come, and there's food for them and food for the camels. Pasuk Lamed Beis. Watch the psukim carefully. Vayavo ha'ish habaisa. So the ish, and we noted in the past, Eliezer is never mentioned by name in Parshas Chayesara. He's either the Eved or the ish. Vayavoha isha baisa, vayfatach agmalim, and then he unmuzzles the camels or unties the camels. Vayiten tevenu mispal agmalim, and then he gave food for the camels. Umayim lechotz raglav, water for to wash his legs, his feet. Veraglei hanashim asherito, and the feet of the men who were with him. Okay, so this is actually the first time that we see any reference to anyone other than Eliezer. There were people with him. They are there hanashim asherito. Okay, they also need to wash their feet. Okay. What's interesting is that they are referred to again in Pasuk Nun Dalet. So let's have a look at Pasuk Nun Dalet. Eliezer's told his story, and now everyone can eat. Pasuk Nun Dalet. Vayochlu vayishtu. They ate and they drank. Who? Him, meaning Eliezer, Vanashim Hashemo, the men who were with him, Ve'alinu Ve'ekum Baboka, they spent the night there, they got up, and he says, time to go. So this is the second pasuk which makes reference to not only Eliezer, but the men who were with him. And the question is, if in these two psukim, which have referred to the people with Eliezer, the reference has changed. Because the earlier pasuk Lamed Beis refers to them as Ha'anashim Asher Ito, the men who were with him. The later pasuk refers to them as Ha'anashim Asher Imo. And of course, it's lost in translation in the sense that both of those words, of course, will be translated as with him. So you'll never know from the English that something's changed. But it has, because the earlier pasuk uses Ito and the later pasuk uses imo, and that begs the question, what is the difference between ito and imo? Which really is the question, how many types of with are there? Because if there's more than one word for with, there's got to be more than one type of with. But what does that mean? Says the Malbim, the difference between es and im is that there are two ways to be with someone. You can be with them in a sense as a follower, as secondary to them, as subject to them or subservient to them. Or you could be with them, but in a sense as an equal. That really is the question. When you're with them, it's you're part of their team, but they are really the ikker and you're the tuffel. They're primary and you're secondary. You're with them in that way, part of their program. Or could it be that you're all equals and equally part of the same program, or perhaps even pursuing different programs? But neither one is subject to the other one. This is the difference between es and im. Says the Malbim, whenever someone is es someone else, they're part of that other person's program. They're secondary to that person. And what's very interesting is, this is borne out in halacha. Because as we know, in halacha, the word es often comes to include something. Es l'rabos, kabein es avicha v'esimecha, and whatever it includes is always secondary to the item being mentioned. It's not the primary thing. It goes along with it, but not really as its equal. The pasuk says v'rachatz b'mayim es besaro. The pasuk which talks about going to the mikveh, you know, it's not just the skin or the flesh that needs to be in the mikveh. Also the hair. Where does that come from? Hair is not flesh. The pasuk says es besaro, says the Gemara, yes. Es includes the hair. Es hatofel le besaro. Es includes something that's secondary. And that's a very interesting resonance in the halacha to what the Malbim is saying in pshat. Es is secondary. Imo means they're equal. They're either equally in the same thing or perhaps equal and have nothing really that much more in common. They just happen to be together. How does this relate to our psukim? You see, says Malbim, in the earlier pasuk, no one has really had any encounter or with any of these other men. Eliezer has been the primary protagonist. He's been the one who's speaking. He conducted the test. The way it looks, everyone else is really secondary to Eliezer. It looks like they're part of his team, and that's why in pasuk Lamed Beis, as it charts for us or gives us the picture of how it looks, it really looks like all the other people are ito, as if to say Eliezer's the ikker, he's the one that's been talking, testing, initiating, etc. And everyone else is ito, they're along with him in that way, but they're secondary. That's why Lamed Beis uses the term ito. But the later pasuk Nun Dalet, describes Eliezer himself. Vayochlu vayishtu, they ate and they drank. Hu v'ha'anashim asher imo. Here, as they're eating and drinking, the pasuk describes the other men as being imo. And the reason is because Eliezer, in his interaction with all of the other servants, he didn't relate to them or have them address him in any way as their superior. When they all eat together. When they drink together. At that stage, you can't tell, is there an ikker? Is there a boss here? Is there a superior here? Is there a senior here? And therefore, because they all ate together and as equals, that's why the men that are with him are called imo, as equals. So you see the difference, a shift. It's in a word, from ito to imo. It's a completely different landscape of the relationship between Eliezer and the men that were with him. We've mentioned in the past that we see this very strikingly in Lot's relationship with Avram in Parshas Lech Lecha. Because there too, we see a fluctuation in these terms of in what way is Lot with Avram. In the beginning, of Lech Lecha, it says, of course, Vayelech Avram, etc. and so forth, Vayelech Ito Lot. Lot went Ito. That was actually Lot at his best, because calling Lot going Es Avram, Ito, means Lot is part of Avram's program. And of course, that's the best program to be part of. As we know, at a certain point, Lot took a turn. At a certain point, he becomes no longer so interested in Avram's spiritual program or his moral program. He's more interested in Lot's program. And it doesn't involve any of those things. It involves material things, even if the means to which he achieves them are questionable. And he ends up in Sodom. What happened? His priorities changed. He didn't take to the vicissitudes of the journey in the same way that that Avram did. He didn't weather that turbulence as well as Avram did. And we find already by the time they're coming up from Mitzrayim, which was its own trauma, and it was, and it's one of the tests, and Sarah was taken, and there was trouble, and then they made it out, and the pasuk says, "Vayal Avram mi Mitzrayim, velot imo." Hanegba. At that point, you can already see Lot is no longer Es Avram. He's Im Avram, meaning he's still with him, but he's biding his time. He's still with him, but not necessarily part of Avram's program. Lot is developing its own program. It's called how Lot can get ahead. And that also bears out this distinction. You said when we're sensitive to these terms, these subtle shifts, they really represent, for Lot, the highs and lows. It's all there marked and time-stamped in the Parsha. I believe there is room perhaps to add that there is another shift of S or M, which we could explain based on this Malbim. But it's perhaps a more subtle idea. And that is, if we take a look at Pasuk Yud Beis, of Perek Kaf Dalet, and this is where Eliezer initiates his test, his program for the test. And what does he say? Vayomar, okay, that takes a while to get past, but then Hashem Elokei Adoni Avraham, Hashem, the God of my master Avram, Hakrino Lefanayayom, please make something good happen for me today. We're going to arrange things for me. Va'aseh chesed im Adoni Avraham. And please perform a kindness with my master Avram. Okay. That's his request. Va'aseh chesed im Adoni Avraham. Interestingly, there is another party that he will ask them to do a kindness for him in this parsha. And that is in Pasuk Memtes. So let's move to Pasuk Memtes. So Eliezer's told his story. He told them about the test and the whole thing, and then he sums the matter up. Pasuk Memtes. Ve'ata im yeshchem osim, if you will perform chesed ve'emes es Adoni hagidu li, if you are prepared to perform kindness and truth with my master, tell me now. Ve'imlo, and if not, hakidulu, tell me. Ve'efne, ayumin, osmal, I'll choose a different direction. I'll go somewhere else. So it's interesting. He is now asking them to perform a kindness, or at least giving them the opportunity to perform a kindness, giving them that option. But he refers to that kindness, it's chesed ve'emes, which is its own question as well. But it's chesed ve'emes es Adoni. And let us ask now this very same question. When he spoke earlier on to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he asked, Vaseh Chesed im Adoni Avraham. But then in a later pasuk, he said, will you perform Chesed ve'emes es Adoni? Why the shift? I believe the answer is as per the above. Namely, there are really two types of ways to perform kindness. Because Avram has a plan. Avram has his plans for Yitzchak, and he has his picture. So now the question is, who is going to be part of that picture? You can ask Lavan to say that, or Lavan and Bethuel, whoever is speaking for that family, that if you release Rivka, it is an act of kindness on your part, but your kindness is that you are allowing her to become part of Avram's program. There is no other program. nothing else is really acceptable. She'll be going with me back to Yitzhak, and that is called a kindness es Avram, because you are now allowing her to become part of Avram's program. When Eliezer in the earlier pasuk asked Hashem to perform a kindness, you can never ask Hashem to be part of someone's program, because they're part of his program. And even if he does kindness for them, that's not subservient to their vision. They're part of his vision. And therefore, whereas if you plan your best, and you can ask people to become part of that plan, and if they are forthcoming, that's called kindness S, because they become part of the plan. But when you ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for kindness, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's infinite wisdom may well include aspects that are beyond your plan, which means you're part of his plan. If he performs a kindness, that is called Chesed Im Adoni Avraham. So it's interesting to see, even in our Parsha, how we see the shift twice. On the one hand, it's a portrayal of the relationship between Eliezer and the people with him, which is the usage of the two terms, but it's also two types of kindness. And that, once again, reminds us of the importance of paying attention to not let a word go unnoticed. Let's conclude by referring to a famous Rashi, which is in Pasuk Lamed Tes. So here is Eliezer again. He's recounting, and Avram told me that I've got to come to you. I've got to come to Haran. I've got to come to his family, and that's where the girl for Yitzhak will be. But as we know, Eliezer raised a question at a certain stage, and that is Va'omar Laduni. I then said to my master, Ulai lo telecha isha acharai. Maybe she won't come after me, which, from a certain point of view, makes perfect sense, because she doesn't know him, and again, he is b'sofo shel davar an eved, so maybe she won't come after. And Avram says, if that's the case, then the whole thing is off. There's no way that Yitzhak is going to go there, and that's that part of the episode there. As we know, Rashi comments, and he comments on the fact that Eliezer's question, or the opening word of his question, ulai, is written chaser. It's written without a vav. So, well, what does that mean? What it means is that if you write it ulai without a vav, it also lends itself to be taken as the word elai, which means to me. So when Eliezer is asking maybe, there's an element of to me in that maybe. What does this mean? What it means is, in Rashi's words, it's from the Medrash, Eliksiv, Bas Haisa, Lo LeEliezer. Eliezer had a daughter, Vayemechaze Limtso Ila, and he was looking for a pretext, some type of way, Sheyomar Avram Lefnose Lav Lasio Bito. Really, what he means is, maybe you don't need to go all the way over there. I mean, maybe there's someone closer to home who could be suitable. Avram rebuffed him in no uncertain terms. Amalu Avraham, Bini Baruch, my son is blessed, Bata Aror, and you are cursed, Ve'ein Aror Medabuk B'Baruch, cursed and blessed, doesn't go together. That's quite a thing to hear. I think one of the astounding things about this whole situation is that Avram proceeded to rely on Eliezer to be the one to carry out this mission. After hearing that rejection, in very blunt terms, so be it. The question, of course, is, as we noted, and we know, this story is told twice. Firstly, the Torah tells it, and then Eliezer retells it. Rashi only comments in Eliezer's retelling. Meaning, Rashi only mentions this idea that Eliezer had a daughter and he thought maybe it's for, and he asked Avram, and Avram said no. He only mentions this when Eliezer retells the story. But of course, it cannot be present in the retelling if it wasn't there in real time, because this is a conversation that took place between Eliezer and Avram, which means it must have happened in actuality, and Eliezer, you can retell it, but it can't be in the recap if it wasn't in the original situation. So why does Rashi make no mention of it the first time around, only the second time? So the question is often asked as a Rashi question. It's not a Rashi question for a simple reason. Rashi's responding to the Pasuk. The Pasuk missed out the letter Vav, wrote Ulai as Eli. The Pasuk only did that the second time round, not the first time round, which means the question doesn't go away, it just needs to be directed somewhere else. You cannot ask Rashi, why did you only comment the second time round? Because Rashi will say, because the Pasuk only did this the second time round. So really now the question is, if we may ask, so then why did the Torah miss out the Vav, which led Rashi to make this comment only the second time round? This whole thing must have existed when this actually happened. And there's many, many answers to this question, but a fascinating response is found in the writings of the Kotzker Rebbe. And whenever you hear the Kotzker Rebbe is about to say something, you don't know what it is, you just know it's not like anything else that anyone else says. And the Rebbe says, there's a reason why the Torah only mentions it the second time round. Something happened. Namely, of course, if this happened, it happened in real time, when he had this conversation with Avram. But the Pasuk doesn't make anything of it. The Pasuk doesn't give an indication that that's part of his question. Why? Because, says the Kotzker Rebbe, at that time Eliezer himself was not aware that that's what he meant when he asked, maybe she won't want to come, should I bring Yitzhak there? He didn't recognize that part of what he's saying is, and maybe he can actually marry my daughter. And why didn't he recognize it? Because he was invested in the situation. Because it was a viable option, but he is a faithful servant, and he has this other motive, and he couldn't bring himself to recognize that that was actually what was motivating him. Because it's not right. So because he was in the situation, he blocked his consciousness of certain aspects of the situation, because sometimes that's the way you get through. Everything changed by the time he comes to retell the story, because at that point, he knows that Rivka is the one to marry Yitzhak. He knows that Yitzhak will not be marrying his daughter. It's done. And because it's done, in a sense, he's now liberated. He's free. He's free to analyze everything that happened because he no longer has the vested interest, because it's a non-interest. It's not going to happen. And therefore, truthful person that he is, he looks back and he realizes that that's what he meant. And what's fascinating about this is that the conversation, when it originally took place between him and Avram, according to what the Rebbe is saying, Eliezer must have felt that he was being misjudged by Avram. If he doesn't recognize that really what he means is that maybe he'll marry my daughter, he can't bring himself to recognize. But Avram sees it. So when Avram says, I know what you're saying, and the answer is no, and at that time, not only did Eliezer feel rejected, but he felt misjudged. Because in his consciousness, he said, well, no, I didn't mean that. Why did he think that I meant that? That I didn't mean that. But now, the truth has set him free, and he looks back and he says, Avram chapt it. I did mean it. He was right to pick that up. And that's why, says the Kotzker Rebbe here, the Torah gives it to us twice, as it's happening and then looking back. And because it has twice, the Torah chooses better to give the allusion to what's going on here, to that aspect of Eliezer's question, when Eliezer recognizes it, which is only the second time around, and not the first time, when he wasn't able to do so. And this is really a fascinating idea. It brings to mind a very interesting story which took place with the Alter Slabodka, Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel, in the Slabodka Yeshiva, who himself, of course, was a very interesting person, to say the least. And at a certain point, the altar, he had certain health issues, and they needed, it wasn't something that could be treated locally. They had to look further afield. And they did their research, because it was a serious thing, and they needed to find the right type of treatment. And in the end, they decided the place where the best treatment would be, you've got to go for the best, is in St. Petersburg. It's a long way away, right, all the way to the north there in Russia. Here he is in Lita, but you got to go where you have to go. And so he traveled to St. Petersburg, and they went to treatment, and the treatment was successful, and it all was fresh. So he was a few days there in St. Petersburg just recuperating. And as he's walking there one day, he bumps into a former Talmud of Slabodka, who, of course, couldn't believe his good fortune. Back in the day, if you go to St. Petersburg, you're never going to see anyone from Slabodka again. And here's the altar, here's the Rebbe. So he was delighted. So they embrace, and Shalom Aleichem, and he says, what brings the Rebbe to St. Petersburg? So the altar says, Reb Nosson Zvi Finkel, he says, have you ever seen those umbrellas where you don't have to open it manually because it's got a spring inside? You can press a button and then it opens by itself. Have you ever seen one of those? So the student says, yes, I've seen one of those umbrellas. And the altar says, that's what brings me to St. Petersburg. So I think we understand that there's a certain point in this type of story where the student has no idea what to say next. How does one respond to that? So the altar says, I can see that you're a little bit surprised by my answer. I'll tell you exactly what I meant. You know, the truth is, why am I in St. Petersburg? I'm here for treatment, and it's not such a common thing. We needed to choose the place that was best. I mean, there's a number of places that we chose, that we were considering, and in the end we chose here, St. Petersburg is best. There were places closer, but it was not as good. So I came here, and Baruch Hashem, treatment was successful, and I'm just now getting back to my son. But you know, now it's over, and the treatment was done, and I've had time to reflect, and I'm thinking back over the choice that I made of this place specifically, and I realize that in retrospect, there may be one or two places quite a bit closer to Slabodka, which could have given just as good treatment. And so I got to wondering, so why was I drawn to St. Petersburg on the understanding that the treatment is best here? And I realized, you know, I was here 10 years ago, there was a rabbinic conference, they all used to meet often, it was the capital city, and the royal city. And so I was here 10 years ago, and because it's such a central and important place, so they had an exhibition of the new things that they'd invented, and so it took my interest. And one of the things I remembered is that they just come up with this umbrella, which you don't have to open because it's got a spring, it's spring loaded. First, the button opens by itself. And I was quite taken by that. And I realize now that when I'm thinking and deciding that St. Petersburg is the best place for me to go for my treatment, really what I was thinking is, I wonder what else they've come up with in St. Petersburg in the last 10 years. And that's why I say the umbrella brought me here. So on the one hand, again, we can see the connection, and this is really part of the whole area of Judaism, of Torah, which is called Musar, which is about self-knowledge, which is not an easy thing at all. It's easier to know other people. The story is told of Rav Volbi Zatzal himself, one of the great mashkichim of the past generation, and he was a mashkich there in Be'er Yaakov, a number of other places. And someone once came to him and requested a chavrusa. He said, I want to learn musar, but like real musar. So that's a dangerous thing to ask a mashkiach, to learn real musar. Not light musar, real musar. So Rav Volbi asked this young man, he says, and why do you want to learn with me? He said, because the mashkiach is going to give me real musar. So Rav Volbi says, are you sure? Are you sure that's why you want to have a chavrusa? Are you sure that it isn't maybe because if you have a chavrusa with a mashkiach, it's something that you can tell people, you know, I learn with a mashkiach once a week, and maybe it's because of that. So that was a crushing blow to this person's his plans, and he kind of made his way towards the door, yeah, as if to say, it was worth a try, but it's clearly that's that. And just before he leaves, Rav Volbi says, I'll see you next week. So he thought he'd been rejected. Rav Volbi said, you wanted real musar. Real musar means starts with a person questioning their motives. And that was our first session. But if you'd be happy to meet for real musar, we can meet again next week. So these are some themes that begin. They start with the psukim, but as we see through Chazal and through the Rashis, down to our times, plenty for us to contemplate, not only historically for that event, but also its various messages for us. We'll leave it over here for this evening.